You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Metaphysical Milkshake, the show where we go deep, we get weird, and we search for the meaning of life along the way. Presented by Cass Media and Soul Pancake. Welcome to Metaphysical Milkshake. I'm your host, Reza Aslan.
And I'm your other host, Rain Wilson.
What are you doing? Are you playing the bassoon?
Yeah. I'm doing a little bassooning.
Oh my God.
Normally I'd charge extra. This would be bonus material, but we don't have a Patreon or anything like that.
So Jesus Christ.
Letting my weird flag fly.
You are genuinely a weirdo. Like, you are like the real deal weirdo.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, I'm a weirdo. I fully embrace it.
Yeah.
My bassoon and chess playing self and Dungeons and Dragons and fantasy and science fiction reading self fully has embraced my inner weirdo. You haven't? Look, I even have, for those watching on our YouTube channel, I even have a bassoon little keychain.
Oh, it's a little mini bassoon.
And that's a mini bassoon.
Yeah. It's like having a picture of your girlfriend on your desk. Listen, it's very easy for you to claim with pride your weirdness when your weirdness has made you a global celebrity. I'm just saying, okay? I have a feeling that this level of pride in your weirdness did not exist when you were, say, 14.
No, it didn't. It didn't. I have talked about this before, but I used to observe normal people, and I would try and imitate them. I would observe normal human interactions at the lunchroom or in restaurants, and see how people would shake hands and pat each other on the back and greet each other. Hey, Scott, how was your weekend? Mine was pretty good, Mark. How about you? Well, I hung out with Dave. How's Dave doing? Well, he's doing pretty good, actually. He's taking a few strokes off his golf game. Finally. And I would observe it almost like a little alien child and strive to incorporate, normal and regular human interaction into my regular behavior. But obviously, that did not turn out so well.
No. Yeah, I mean, I was weird, not by choice. Obviously, I was an immigrant kid, could barely speak any English. But I remember, like, and I've mentioned this before in previous podcasts, striving very, very hard to not be weird, to be like everybody else, to to, you know, to hide who I really am, to pretend that I was something else, someone else, to try mm-hmm. my hardest to fit in. And like, I really look back on those years and I kind of feel bummed about it. Like, I really feel like, you know, I wish I would have had the self-confidence necessary to just be weird and, you know, just like, fuck it. Like, I'm a weirdo. This is who I am. Deal with it.
Well, the stakes were so much higher for you. You know, for me, it was like, just get the crap beat out of me and get made fun of. Right? But for you, it's like, you need to fit in to this new world, America and Oklahoma, or else you'll perish. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I imagine on some primal, traumatic, instinctual level, you were like, God damn it, Aslan, like, fit in, get people to like me, be successful. Yes.
It was my monkey brain. I was like, I was the caveman outside of the cave going, what do I need to do to get shelter and fire? Fire and shelter. What must I do? Yeah, I think that's exactly right. But how I wish in those years that I had some kind of, like, I don't know, weird icon, some paragon of weirdness, a North Star, a weird God that I could worship, a North Star of weirdness that I could follow and be like, hey, like that works. That it works for that guy. I could be weird. Rain could be weird.
A curly haired, giant hatted, itinerant God of weirdness. Wait a second. I think we might have someone.
Hold on.
I think we might have someone. A personal friend, a dear personal friend, the weirdest guy that we know, the king of polka, Alfred Matthew Weird Al Yankovic, known professionally as Weird Al, had a comedy song air in 1976, and he sold 12 million albums, recorded more than 150 parody songs and over 1,000 live shows, 5 Grammys, 11 nominations, 4 gold records, 6 platinum records.
Wow.
He's that God that we have been looking for.
The God of Weird. And he's got a new movie called Weird, the Weird Al Yankovic story. It's essentially a semi-autobiographical, semi-fictional, weird hybrid movie about his life and his origin story. And it stars the one and only Rainn Wilson.
Patton Oswalt. Oh, more on that later. Yes, so excited to bring on the show one of my mentors, my inspirations.
The greatest.
One of the greatest of all time. Al, are you there, Al? Al, how are you?
I'm good, Ryan. Thanks for asking. And yourself?
I'm good. It's been a little while. It's been a few months. How have you been?
I've been okay. I've been on the road pretty much since I saw you last time. We started in late April, I guess, and we're continuing on till the end of October. We finish up at Carnegie Hall in New York. But it's a nonstop tour. I'm not going to see my home for a while.
How do you get to Carnegie Hall?
Don't.
Well, I was told that some practice is involved.
Which you've been doing for 40 years. But
that's correct.
Most importantly, how's the movie?
Oh, it's amazing.
For those of you who don't know, Rainn Wilson was also in this movie, played the great Dr. Demento, who had a pretty huge role in your life, Al, right?
Absolutely. Yes. And Rainn was fabulous. And Dr. Demento continues to be fabulous. He gave me my start way back in the early days and then played my stuff on the radio when literally nobody else would even think about doing so. And he's a big part of my life and a big part of this movie.
Now, this is a serious question, Al, because people who have worked with Rainn will often say what a diva he is on set. You know, he doesn't like people to talk to him or look at him in the eyes. How was that with you working with him on set?
You know, people just came to learn after a while that Rainn just gets violent if you talk to him. So they gave him a space, yes. Gave him a little bubble, which, and that worked out. You know, everybody just kind of kept to their own.
So, Al, we're going to get into a pretty deep conversation about what is weird. And we're going to wax philosophical and wax a little goofy at the same time. But before we go there, because we never even really got to have this conversation, but now that we're like sitting, because I, for people who don't know, I was a last minute replacement for Dr. Demento, a certain actor, comedian who had originated the role.
Robert De Niro.
Broke their foot, De Niro, close, Patton Oswalt, Patton De Niro. And so we didn't even get to really sit down and have a discussion. But now that we have you here, like, it's a little after the fact. I know you don't normally talk to an actor about the real life character that they've already portrayed months ago. But how? Tell us about Dr. Demento. How did you meet him? What was he like? How did he become kind of your mentor and supporter in those early days?
Well, Dr. Demento was sort of the dessert at the end of the week on KMET Los Angeles. That was the big rock station in LA. And it was just like straight ahead album-oriented rock. But every Sunday night for 4 hours, it was the Dr. Demento show. And that was 4 hours of mad music and crazed comedy. It was novelty and comedy, just the wildest, weirdest stuff you'd ever hear on the radio. And I lived for that. I mean, it was like a religious experience for me to hear the Dr. Demento show. And every once in a while, I would call up the request line, and he would actually pick up the phone. And I got to talk to Dr. Demento. And I thought, wow, amazing. This is amazing. And it was a few years later that I started getting invited to come down to a show because I would send him unsolicited tapes in the mail, which he'd play on the radio, and again, blowing my mind. And then he would have me come down and answer phones at the radio station, and we got to be friends, and we were friends to this day.
So you were literally answering phones for Dr. Demento. That's incredible. And what were people requesting? Like, I want to hear Monty Python song from Life of Brian, and you'd pass it on to the good doctor?
No, I'm sure you want to hear the new Weird Al song. I'm sure you want to hear the new Weird Al song, right? And check that one out. No, yeah. No, there are actually several people. He'd have several people, like, he'd have a whole cast. It was like a party every week. He'd have me and Musical Mike and Sulu and Damascus and Beefalo Bill and all these crazy characters. And we would just have fun and hang out and answer phones and make noises and blow on noisemakers during the show.
You know, it must have been the weirdest thing to, like, be on the set of a movie about your own life. Is this something that you wanted to do for a while? Did you want to tell this story for a while? And what was it like actually watching it unfold before your eyes?
Well, it's something that we've been pitching for a little while. When we did the original Funny or Die video, that was back in 2010.
Right.
And the movie is very much a movie version of that Funny or Die trailer. And back then I thought, you know, this is really, really funny and the fans loved it. But I thought, you know, this is a 3.5 minute bit. It is exactly what it's supposed to be. People are like, oh, you should do a movie. Like, no, it's a trailer. It works fine as is. But then a couple of years ago, all these movies started coming out, like Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocket Man and these biopics that were taking some pretty strong liberties with the facts and using a lot of artistic license. And I thought, well, maybe we can do a movie where we just kind of throw a verisimilitude to the wind and basically just have a lot of fun with it. So by the end of the second act, I'm like battling a drug cartel, you know, that kind of thing.
So real life.
Yeah.
Well, the thing I loved about the script, and I haven't seen the finished product, Al, but I thought you guys did such a masterful job of capturing a really difficult tone where the movie takes itself just seriously enough that you can't, it's not an airplane material, you know, it's not a send up, but it's impossibly absurd at the same time, but it takes itself deathly seriously. How did you guys find that tone? I guess that was in the original Funny or Die comedy sketch, but it's really hard to do what you guys did for a full 90 minutes.
Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah, the tone is very difficult, and I give all credit to Eric Appel, the director, for that. It's amazing. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head because it is a comedy, and it is very funny, but the tone is very serious. And that's a hard line to tread on because, you know, there are some very serious dramatic moments in the film. There are points in the movie where people might get a little teary-eyed. I mean, there's some real, real acting moments. And at the same time, there's some ridiculous moments. But it never, we're never winking. We're never like poking people in the ribs, like, hey, you get it. It's all done in a very serious, we wanted to hit all the traditional biopic tropes and kind of send those up. But at the same time, there's some real information in there, and there's a lot of places where we tweak it a bit for comedic effect, but it's all done with a very straight face.
So you never did date Madonna, who was a world famous gun runner and drug czar?
Well, for legal purposes, no. I have to say that that's never been the case. I met her once briefly, I think in 1985. Some kind of ceremony where she was being presented with an award, and we talked for 30, 45 seconds, maybe. So that's the extent of my actual interaction with her. And she may or may not be contacting me after this movie comes out. We'll find out.
Yes. Her lawyers might be very, very interested in the content of this movie. So we'll see what happens. Fingers crossed.
30, 35 seconds. That's dating in my book.
Yeah. We had a relationship.
You know, Rain, some people say that coffee is a lot like pizza, where like even a not great cup of coffee is still a cup of coffee. It's still pretty good. No, that's not true. There's good coffee and there's bad coffee. And life is way too short to drink bad coffee. I'm one of these people. I drink a lot of coffee. And I can't really tell you what it is that makes a good cup of coffee taste so good. But what I do know is that whenever I get my coffee from Trade Coffee, it is always fantastic.
What they do is they partner with independent roasters all over the nation to freshly roast and send the best coffees in the country direct to your home on your preferred schedule. And listen, your coffee experience can be as simple or sophisticated as you want. They taste test hundreds of coffees from around the United States every month to curate over 450 exceptional coffees that make the cut. Or if you want something curated just for you, all you got to do is just take a minute, take the coffee questionnaire. It's an online survey. It's super simple, and you'll be expertly matched with your perfect coffee, and a fresh bag of beans will be on its way flying to you. The coffee I get from Trade is so good. They even have decaf coffees, by the way, and some delicious ones. And I can't believe I'm actually saying that. So Trade is the easiest way to get your very best tasting coffee delivered fresh when you need it.
So if you want to support small businesses and brew the best cup of coffee you've ever made at home, it's time to try Trade Coffee. And right now, Trade is offering our listeners a total of $30 off your first order, plus free shipping. All you got to do is go to drinktrade.com/milkshake. That's drinktrade.com/milkshake for $30 off your subscription to the best coffees in the country.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team, led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It always drives me kind of a little bit crazy when you're described as like a parody, songwriter or performer or whatever, because Jesus Christ, you have 5 Grammy Awards. You have 4 gold records. You have 6 platinum records. You're a New York Times bestselling author. I mean, you're like a global superstar. And in fact, this is the thing, Rain and I were talking about this earlier, about like when we first started like listening to Weird Al songs. And it occurred to us that we were about the age that my sons are now, and my sons absolutely worship you. In fact, Would it be all right if I, they would kill me if I didn't invite them on to say
oh,
hi. Would
please.
It be all
right if I, absolutely. Can I just call them in? Of course, of course.
All right, here we go.
Of all course.
Right. Hey, boys.
Fasten your seatbelt, Al, because you're on a bus, literally. Fasten your literal seatbelt.
I have a lot of children.
Here comes a bunch of Aslans.
Hey, all right. How you doing?
This is Asa. This is Jasper.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hello.
You know, the one thing I'll tell you about Jasper is that he has really taken some real inspiration from you. And now he writes his own parody songs. Yep. It's just that they're all about Minecraft.
There's a market for that.
You
find a niche?
Possibly.
Jasper, can you sing one of your parody Minecraft songs?
No. He's not ready to perform just yet. But anyway, these guys were just dying to meet you. And anything you want to ask? Anything you any questions for Weird Al? Starstruck. It's okay. It happens to the best of us. So all of that is to say, you know, you're talking about generations of kids. And adults, of course, you know, who've been listening to you, who've grown up with you, whose kids are now listening to you. You know, it's funny to say this, but like, I'm not sure if there is a rival to Weird Al Yankovic. Like, is there, you know what I'm talking about? Like, people who have achieved a certain level of success or stardom or fame, regardless of in what industry you're talking about, you can sort of name two or three people who are essentially, you know, they're rivals that you kind of say in the same breath. I, honestly, Rain, name anyone else in Weird Al's category.
Okay, I have a funny story about this. So my friend Aaron Lee, who's a comedy writer, knew these two other comedy writers, and they, I don't even know if you remember this happening, Al, they wanted to pitch a TV show that Al would star in, a reality show. And it was like, find the next great song parodist. And they met with Al. This is a true story. This was like early 2000s. And they're like, Al, we want to do a show where we find young song parody people. And you're like the godfather of song parody. And then you put the mantle on whoever the new song parody person is. And Al's response was like, no, are you kidding? This is what I do. I do song parodies. I'm going to do it for another 30 or 40 years. I don't want someone new. I don't want to bring on someone new. This is my gig. This is who I am.
Literally about six different production companies pitched me that exact same idea. And I'll say like, why do I want to find the next Weird Al? I'm still Weird Al.
I'm still selling albums. I mean, your last album was number one. I mean, you're still relevant. We wanted to get into the essence of weird. So weird is something Reza and I have talked a great deal about. I know for me, in the early 80s, when I was coming of age, there was no worse word to be called than weird. Like, especially if a girl called you weird, oof. Oh, it's the word. Like, you're weird. It was just like, it was the kiss of death to be called weird. And I was terrified of that, of being thought of as weird, and yet I fully embraced weird. And I was, as many of our listeners know, at the same time, I was on the chess team, the marching band, where I wore a kilt and played the xylophone.
Wow.
I played the bassoon. I was on Model United Nations and the Pottery Club. And these were all at the same time. So there was none stranger at Shorecrest High School in Seattle. And I was mortified, but it was just who I was. I couldn't separate myself from my identity as weird. But Al, what was your story of weird? How did you come to embrace this moniker that I am sure began as a label of great shame and humiliation, and then you spun it into gold? and platinum.
Yeah. My upbringing was very close to yours. I never played the bassoon or, you know, went to the United Nations. But other than that, you know, I was a prototypical nerd. You know, I was always eating by myself or with one or two other similar nerds at the lunch table at school. And, you know, you have to understand back then, being a nerd was not something you aspired to. I mean, nowadays, like, you'll have like hot women saying, oh, I love nerds. I've always been a nerd myself. Yeah. And that was not the case in the last millennium.
No, it was not.
But hold on a second, because let me stop you right there. Because Reza, we've talked about this before. That's ridiculous. You have like Charlize Theron and Jessica Alba and like these incredible, you know, all of these top movie stars. And they're like, I was a nerd in high school.
Oh,
I
shut
was
up.
Like the nerds. It's like, bullshit. You did not. Give me a break. A, you were not a nerd. And B, you didn't talk to nerds. Come on, Jennifer Aniston. Really, you hung out with them? No, you did not.
There was definitely a tipping point. I don't know, like 15 years ago or so, I think there was a tipping point where nerds became kind of cool. Like, certainly when we were growing up, it was not the case. But I don't know exactly what was on the water or the air, but all of a sudden people were like, oh, yeah, nerds are okay. They make all the shiny toys. They're all right. And then all of a sudden people, they'll look like Napoleon Dynamite are hipsters and they're cool. And you aspire to look like I looked in high school for some reason.
I was just going to say, you never played the bassoon, but you were in the Volcano Worshippers Club in high school, which kind of worse, maybe sort of worse.
Well, you know, that was strictly a gag. We never had a single meeting. I started the club just so I could get an extra picture of myself in the yearbook. That was the whole deal. So we took a picture and called ourselves the Volcano Worshippers, and that was all that there ever was of that.
I don't understand why anyone would find you weird. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Now I can't run for president, though, because they'll look at my high school yearbook. You're the Volcano Worshippers? I don't know.
That's right. Yes, that's the only reason you can't run for president.
That's the only reason.
So, you know, it's kind of common knowledge. People who are familiar with you know that you got the nickname Weird Al. In, I guess it was a college dormitory.
Yeah.
You were younger than everybody else there, a bit of an outcast. I mean, you were, you know, a semi-professional, you know, accordion player. That tends to get noticed. But what I'm curious about is, you know, clearly it was meant as an insult, and I would imagine you understood it as an insult. What do you think it meant? Like, what do you think people were saying when they called you weird? Like, what were they reacting to? What were they saying about you?
Well, just that I was outside the norm. I was different. I was unusual. I was making them uncomfortable with my behavior, apparently. And when I decided to call myself Weird Al, you know, I just took it on, you know, in retrospect, it was a form of empowerment. But I didn't really know, like, the ramifications that would happen like decades after the fact. Like, I sometimes wonder, like, did I make the right decision, like, branding myself as Weird Al? Because now I'm like Weird Al my whole life. But I've heard from so many people that felt, you know, like they were diminished in the eyes of others because they were different or unusual or weird. That, you know, here's a guy that was like feeling okay about being weird. He was Weird Al. And for those people, it made them feel better about themselves. That made them feel like it was maybe okay that they were a little bit different.
I have a story about that. My other son, who unfortunately you didn't get to see because he's upstairs, I have a very clear memory. This is maybe about a year ago or so, that he came home from school and he said, you know, I asked him how school was or whatever. And he said, you know, the mean girls, there's a group of mean girls, of course, even in elementary school, there's always a group of mean girls. The mean girls called me weird. And I said, oh man, I'm immediately back to my childhood. And I said, I said, oh man, buddy, I'm sorry about that. You know, the girls are mean and it's okay. And he's like, no, I actually said to them, that's right, I am weird and I love being weird. It's like, I am
that's
weird
awesome.
And that's cool. That's what I am. I was like, wow. Like, that is, I'm sorry, but when I was 10, 11 years old, if a girl called me weird, that was it for me.
That was it. Oh man.
And I really do think that a huge part of it has to do, you know, with what you were saying, that the kind of using this derogatory term as a form of empowerment, like taking it on and saying, damn right, I'm weird. That's what it's cool to be weird. And it's something that he's carried with him.
That's so great to hear. Wow.
And I think, Al, that's why you're a hero to so many, as you paved the way for so much oddness. I mean, you had talked about that tide that turned about 16 or 20 years ago. I think it was Beck. I think it was Beck combined with Rivers Cuomo from Weezer that all of a sudden defined, oh my God, there are rock stars who are nerds. And I want to say, too, for the record, I know, Al, a long time ago, you reached out to me to be in the video of White and Nerdy. I could have been in the video for White and Nerdy.
That's my favorite of your songs.
But I was busy, or I was shooting, or I was somewhere, and I didn't, I couldn't do it. And that's one of the great regrets I have in my life. But changing gears a little bit. So the word weird, we did a little research on it. It used to mean destiny. It used to mean controlling destiny. It had to do with the fates.
Yeah.
And that all of a sudden, Shakespeare used weird in Macbeth. Can you say Macbeth on a podcast? I think you can.
I think it's all right.
And all of a sudden, and weird became, yes, fates and destiny. The witches were the kind of the fates, you know, controlling Macbeth's fate. But they were also odd, and they were just, quite frankly, weird. So the word actually became what it means today, which is odd or offbeat or what have you. But
fucking Shakespeare, right? Fucking Shakespeare ruins everything.
To you, what is your definition, Al, of weird?
Well, I looked it up before this podcast on Merriam-Webster, and the second definition is of relating to or caused by witchcraft. And that's the definition I relate the most with, because most of my songs are, in fact, made by witchcraft. So I think they're spot on.
But there is something really interesting about this, because, like, I guess weird is one of those words where you have to believe that there is such a thing as normal in order to believe that there's such a thing as weird, right? Like, we all have to agree what is normal for someone to be weird. But, like, is there even such a thing as normal, Al? Like, is that a thing?
Well, it's societal. It's whatever people decide normal is. Like, what's normal to somebody will be weird to somebody else. Like, if you were to drive a horse and buggy down Fifth Avenue, well, that's not a great example, because New Yorkers don't really think anything's weird. They probably wouldn't bat an eye. But I mean, that would be unusual for them, but probably not so much for Ezekiel back on the Amish farm, you know?
Yeah. So believe it or not, in preparation for this conversation, Al, we had an epic research doc prepared about weirdness and psychological studies having to do with weirdness. And we found out some really interesting stuff. There was, for instance, a study that was done by Sharon Kim at Johns Hopkins University Business School, where she was wondering if social pariahs are actually more creative. So she created teams of people, and some people were just rejected randomly from the teams, and they were given tasks. So there were the people who fit in, and then there were the rejects. And the tasks were to be creative, to do a bunch of exercises, et cetera, and to also to draw an alien from a planet very unlike our own. And they found in this study that the rejects were better at all the exercises, and for even especially the alien task. The people who fit in the experiment drew aliens that were kind of like cliched Martians and whatnot. But the rejected participants drew these really imaginative, beautifully designed aliens that looked radically different from humans. All these appendages sticking out of their body, et cetera, onwards. So they have found that being a social pariah, being a reject, being an outcast, actually leads to far greater creativity.
I would agree 100%. I think there's a direct correlation between weirdness and creativity, because weirdness, almost by definition, is thinking outside the box. I mean, Apple had that whole marketing campaign a number of years ago, Think Different, which was, along very similar lines, like all the great world leaders and all the great inventors were people who think differently. And I think the campaign should have been just be a big freaking weirdo, because that's the same thing, essentially. Like, let your weird freak flag fly. Like, that's where the creativity comes from. It's not from like going along with the norm. It's from, beating your own drum.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Yeah, and it's actually really, it makes so much sense too, because of this notion that the people who were in a group had to constantly, talk about ideas, talk about like how they would answer the question, what is our alien going to look like? And it just kind of reduces everything to that sort of base norm. But if you have no one, if you have no one telling you that's stupid, that's weird, don't do that, if you have no box, right, to be trapped inside of, then it's very easy to think outside of it. And it's not, by the way, just creativity. The same is true for innovation and inventiveness. And then here's where it gets really weird. So it turns out that, weirdos, by which we just mean the social outcasts. It's okay. Maybe we should stop using that phrase, but you know what I'm saying.
I can say it because I am one.
Not only do they have like these creative strengths and these innovative strengths because they can think, outside of the box and all that stuff. They're not like, limited by societal ideas of what is right and et cetera. But they can also develop these ways to calm their social anxiety in a way that people who actually aren't, used to being in crowds cannot, which seems counterintuitive, right? Like if you're, an outcast, if you're a weirdo, usually that has a lot to do with social anxiety. But it turns out that the very act of being alone, a lot, of being on the outside a lot, creates far greater comfort with yourself than the act of constantly having to perform for a group, constantly having to be, like everyone else. So in this weird way, it's like weirdness becomes this crazy superpower that, we are only now starting to understand.
It's interesting that way, because the people that have that kind of mindset tend to develop a lot of self-confidence in a weird kind of way. I always think about a guy that was in my math class freshman year, who would come to class, sit in the front row, and bring a box of like Captain Crunch cereal in a bowl and eat breakfast during class. There was no rule saying he couldn't. Sometimes he'd show up barefoot to class, and people were like, oh, the weird guy. He didn't care. He was living his life. He wasn't hurting anybody. He was just doing his own thing.
Right. And that's what I think is surprising, right? Because I guess when you really break it down, it does make sense. Like if you don't give a shit what anyone thinks about you and your Captain Crunch, then in a strange way, far from developing what we think weirdos develop, like social anxiety and, awkwardness, in reality, like you're supremely confident. If you're walking around with an accordion. If you're wearing a kilt and playing the xylophone in front of people, then you're actually fairly confident in who you are.
Yeah. I think sometimes, you know, I can't speak from experience, but I think sometimes people that indulge in alcohol and controlled substances, I think they're looking for an excuse to be weird. I think they secretly, they want to be weirder than they are in normal life, but they don't have an excuse for that kind of behavior. So they, you know, go that direction.
I thought you were going to end your story about the Captain Crunch guy by saying, and the name of that student, Jeff Bezos. You know, I thought I was waiting for like the caption, but I know for me, Al, you know, I think I'm a pretty funny guy and can play some pretty funny characters, but I don't think that I'm any kind of like comedic genius or anything like that. Far from it. I'm just a comic character actor and I know how to play weird characters. And, but I do think that because I was such an outcast in school that comedy comes from being weird. I think humor is generated from that pressure cooker of not fitting in. You've got to find other ways to relate to people because I never was easygoing. I just was never like the easy, you know, the popular, I would watch the popular kids. I remember studying them and they were so easygoing. They'd be like, hey bro, how's it going? Hey, good. How was your weekend? Hey, excellent. Are you going to have the tuna salad? I don't know. Hey, what's Molly up to? I don't know. She seems down in the dump. I would watch their conversation. I'm like, wow, how do they relate to each other with just such ease and effortlessness? And for me, just conversation was just so awkward and difficult. But that energy that went inside me and then it came out sideways, and I had to learn to fit in by being the class clown, making people laugh, quoting Monty Python sketches, you name it. And I think that particular petri dish of being ostracized gave me a career.
Yeah. You know, I hear a lot of comedians say that a lot of comedy comes from pain or suffering or some traumatic experience. That certainly was my experience. I mean, I had a fairly normal and happy childhood, but I obviously did have that outsider status thing going on. I never felt like I belonged. I was always, in fact, when I started my career, my whole thing was I was this weird kid from LA that was like poking fun at the elite people, all these rock stars inside this hermetically sealed bubble of pop fame. And I actually enjoyed that status. It became a little, the lines got a little blurry after a few years when I was like winning Grammys and showing up at the same award shows as these people I was making fun of. And all of a sudden I was sort of like in the bubble with them, and it became a little bit of a different dynamic. But starting out, certainly having that outsider status was critical to developing this kind of comedic persona.
Here you are now decades into this incredibly successful career. And we also talked about the fact that weirdness nowadays apparently is cool. Like that's a thing now where like nerds get the girls and weird people, you know, get to be popular at school and stuff. And so I just wonder if like, not just in your particular case, but just in general, in society, has the popularity of weirdness kind of changed the power and efficacy of weirdness? We just talked about how weirdness is this crazy superpower, this unexpected superpower. But if like weirdness is a positive now, or if it's popular now, is it no longer weird? I guess is what I'm saying.
I don't think people are getting weirder. I think as a species, we've always had about the same percentage of weirdness sprinkled among us. But I think we have more access to show off our weirdness. That's the thing. Because we have the internet. We have social media. Back when I was starting out, the only place where I could show off my weirdness was the Dr. Demento show. That was basically it. That was the only outlet. And now anybody with a camcorder or a laptop can get their stuff out there, and we see a lot more of it. We see how weird we really are, and it's exciting and scary and all the emotions, but we're starting to really see what we look like and sound like and feel like.
Amazing. Well, Al, listen, you've been a hero of mine since I was 16 and
heard you play Another One Rides the Bus on the Dr. Demento radio show in Chicago one Sunday evening. And the fact that I got to be in your movie playing Dr. Demento is just, crazy. Again, a bucket list, checklist item. This movie is going to be fantastic. People are salivating to watch it. Thank you for having me be a part of Weird, the Al Yankovic story, and for coming on the show, for being a pioneer to allow all of us to let our freak flags fly. You truly are a living God, and thank you for that.
That went somewhere.
Oh, Rain, you're the best. You were phenomenal in the movie. I know you haven't, as of right now, you have not seen it yet. You were phenomenal, hilarious. I cannot wait for you to see it. Thank you for the kudos. I love you dearly. I will see you in real life someday, one of these days.
Good luck on your tour. I also want a big shout out to Patton Oswalt. Thank you for breaking your foot and enabling the understudy to step in to the shoes of Dr. Demento. Good luck with the rest of the tour, Al. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
You know, Rain, hearing you tell that story to Al about, being Patton Oswalt's stand-in reminds me that the original idea for this podcast was actually me and Patton Oswalt. Like Patton got in touch with me. He was like, hey, maybe we should do like a little podcast together. And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. And then I think
Patton Oswalt is into life's biggest philosophical, spiritual, and psychological questions of humanity.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
But anyway, long story short, he couldn't make it. And then you stepped in. So I really feel like that's kind of a pattern.
Wow. How about that? You know, it's amazing, Reza, in this conversation, I had never thought of it before, but you mentioned it actually in our preparation for the episode and during the course of it that, you know, is weirdness a superpower? And I think that's really brilliant because I think about me and my friends. I think about the artists and the misfits. I think about the rock stars that I love, mm-hmm. the music that I like, the innovators that I look up to. There's a certain element of misfit in them, which gives them actual powers to transform their oddity, their pain into beauty, into entertainment. I think you really hit on something. I feel like this could be like a book deal.
I it's true. I'd never really like thought about it until this conversation. But like, you know, when you're popular or when you're part of the crowd, and everybody who's listening to this knows exactly what I'm talking about.
I don't think that's our audience.
You find yourself, that's true. You find yourself constantly changing in order to meet the crowd where it's at. Do you know what I mean? Like if the crowd's like, hey, we all love, you know, football, then you're like, yeah, football, and you start to like football. Or if the crowd,
wait a minute, you and I both really like football.
We love football. That was bad. That is, but like,
terrible,
if the crowd is like, that guy sucks, you know, you start to kind of go along with the sort of, okay, well, that guy sucks. Or it's this weird groupthink that happens when you try to conform and belong. And it's involuntary. You don't really think about it. I mean, I'm basically just describing my entire childhood as trying to change who I am in order to belong. But when you are told from the beginning, you don't belong. you have nothing to conform to. Go to your corner. You're not like us. You're an outcast. It creates this sense of like, well, you don't need to perform anymore, right? You can really just be who you are and think what you think and feel what you feel. And when you think about it now, like, of course, it makes so much sense. Of course that those weirdos tend to become the innovators and the inventors and the creators and the performers, the people who think outside of the box because they're not trapped in the box, you know? It's kind of an inspiring thought, right? I mean, It's really, I wish someone would have told me that when I was 12.
Yeah, I also think that when you're popular and well-liked, and, you know, God, I wish I had that test of being popular and well-liked, but I don't think you have to try as hard to fit in. It's easier to settle, I think. You know, if you don't have to actually be funny to get your jokes laughed at, if you don't have to try something different and unique to be liked or appreciated, you're just kind of naturally liked and appreciated for who you are. In other words, well-balanced. So does this mean that in the future, Reza, let's say there's some utopian future where there's no bullying and people are just loving to one another and accepting of everyone's differences and diversities. Does that mean that creativity will be lost? The innovators will be lost?
Put another way, if weirdness becomes the new normal, then is there any weirdness left? I don't know. That's a question for our milkshakers to ponder upon. Let us know what you think. You can find us on social media at Reza Aslan and at Rain Wilson, and on Twitter at Metamilk Podcast, and on Instagram at Metaphysical Milkshake. Let us know what you think about the future of weirdness. And remember to follow, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to podcasts. And you can also subscribe to the Metaphysical Milkshake YouTube channel. See our full episodes every week. You could actually get to see Weird Al in that awesome hat in a tour bus talking to fellow weirdos.
Indeed. And we'd love to hear from you too. Like, what superpower did your weirdness give you? You can write us as well at metaphysical@castmedia.com. That's cast with a K. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks so much for watching/listening, everyone. We'll see you next week. Metaphysical Milkshake is executive produced by Rain Wilson, Reza Aslan, and Colin Thompson. It is produced by Safa Samazadeh Yazd, Harris Lane, Mick DeMaria, Hashem Self, and DJ Lubel. Cast Media is the production and distribution partner. Original music by Jeff Tang. What is semi-professional accordion player? How does that work?
I actually don't know.
It's somebody who's supposed to get money but doesn't. If you do a gig and they don't pay you, that's semi-professional.
That's right. There you go.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.